We are live. Welcome, folks, to the Survival Podcast, episode 3772. Today is Tuesday, December the 9th, and this is going to be an episode called Are We the Last Free Generation? I've actually done versions of this show in the past. I think this will be the third time I've hit right into this particular subject this way, even using mostly the same bullet points. But I've listened over the week to my last two versions of it. The two were quite different from each other, and I think this one will be as well. As we move on, the problem becomes worse and the reality becomes more evident. And I think that's an interesting place to be in our society today. With that in mind, what exactly do I mean by this? Well, when I say we are the last free generation, I think a lot of people out there like me in this audience are in that Gen X range. In fact, I would say the majority of the audience are solid Gen X or younger boomers or older millennials. That cohort would probably make up, I'm going to say 70-ish% of the audience, 70-ish%. And that's even ruling out, that's with ruling out younger millennials and older boomers, because we do have some of those as well. But like kind of like a first, last 5 years of the boomers, all of Gen X, and the first 5 years of millennials are probably 60 to 70% of the audience. So there's a tendency to think when I say last free generation, I'm talking about Gen X, or I'm talking about kind of that cohort, your older millennials and younger boomers with the X in the middle. I don't actually mean that. When I say a generation, I think at any point, well, we have distinctive generations alive at any time, usually about four of them, in numbers sufficient to for demographers to care. I actually mean kind of like the place and point that we are. Okay, like so we are all here now, right? The millennials are here now. Gen X is here now. The youngest Gen Alphas, right? The little kiddies, they're here now. Boomers are still around, and there's a little tiny bit of the silence left, not very many of those guys. So I think at any point in time, you can kind of look at like this is a generation of generations, if we don't put it that way. So anybody around now has seen things at least as good as they are, or has seen them, let's say, better than they are. And I believe that as much as many of us lament the loss of freedoms in our lifetime, we have only just begun to see the decline. That your children may very well tell their children, or if you're older like me, right, your grandchildren may very well tell your great-grandchildren about how much more freedom they had when they were kids and young adults than today. I think that anybody who would in any way argue that, let's say, someone of my age, when I was 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, that young kind of coming of age period, anybody would argue that my cohort, my generation, didn't have more freedom than kids in that cohort today has to be so young as to have not remembered it, or you were in some weird kind of place where like you were sheltered and didn't see it, I guess. If you were a kid that grew up in a small town, rural area, something like that, in the 1980s, early 90s, late 70s, through all that period of time, you probably remember nobody even giving a flying shit where you were or what you were doing. As long as you didn't get in trouble, as long as somebody's mom didn't call somebody's mom who called your mom, you were okay. I mean, that was kind of the bar. You went somewhere, you called your parents and said, hey, I'm going to be staying at Steve's house, and that was the end of that, right? You said you were going to be home by a certain time. As long as you got home by that time and nobody made a phone call, you were good. And that's just being a kid. If we look at the totality of everything, like the freedom of everybody, go look at some of the raunchy and slapstick comedy movies produced in the 70s and 80s and tell me you could even make those movies today. So we got on one hand, we got kids. On the other hand, we got Hollywood. And both of them have seen that freedom come down. It's not just Hollywood won't make those movies. It's they can't. Right. I mean, I know some of y'all are thinking like Blazing Saddles and Spaceballs, which supposedly Spaceballs 2 is coming. I'm not even talking about like some kind of raunchy. You remember Porky's? Right. If you're a teenage boy in the 80s, you waited for that to come on HBO or Cinemax, man, right? Like, we couldn't make those movies. Not that the sexual content can't be there, but the normalness, the goofing around, the extreme level of goofiness. Like, you take the real thing and take it to the extreme for the purpose of humor. None of this stuff can just be done today. So we've seen the freedom decline, but yet there's still so much freedom. In some ways, we have less freedom. In some ways, we have more. We have more economic freedom than we've ever had in a life of living Americans, I should say, just with Bitcoin. There's nobody alive today has ever seen a time where money can easily be transacted from one party to another across, you know, space and time in seconds in a way that's uncensorable. For all the social media censorship, and Elon did not free speech, right? I mean, X is actually probably more censorship ridden today than Facebook, and that's crazy. But we do have, you know, maybe we're not using them, but we have options of real free speech that has power and reach around the world. We didn't have that in 1985. Podcasting is a form of freedom that we did not have in the 1980s and the 90s and even the very early 2000s. If you wanted to do something like I'm doing right now, I'm communicating across multiple platforms, and then the audio will go out against multiple platforms where somebody in another country halfway around the world, all the way on the other side, exact opposite of the world, can listen to me and hear me, right? If you want to do anything approaching that in the 80s, I encourage you to look up an old movie with Christian Slater in it called Pump Up the Volume with Hard Harry, right? You had to do pirate radio. So it's a weird mix, but there's an interesting thing that happens in history. When you have a weird mix of totalitarianism and freedom colliding, generally speaking, people will always choose safety and security over dangerous freedom. And thereby, they will not only allow but encourage the state to take more freedom. And I fear that that's the precipice upon which we stand today. You know, my show notes today, I wrote that it was once said of the Native Americans that never have a people been this free prior to what we did to destroy that freedom. And it's true, but it's not true. It's funny how revisionist history ruins everything, but do you think that, like, the place today that you would call France or the United Kingdom or Belgium or Holland or Italy, right? All of Europe, Western Europe. Do you think that there wasn't a time when society there was like tribal? You think like just civilization just grew out of the ground like a fucking turnip? Right? That didn't happen. The entire global population at one time or another in history was every bit as free, maybe more so, than the romanticized version of the American Indian or the Native American Indian, right? Like, we were. Like, every race, every creed, every piece of humanity at one point was free. And then every place in the world experienced totalitarianism in cycles. Every place in the world has had slavery. There is no recorded civilization where there was no slavery at any time in history. If you listen to the revisionists that teach history to your children today, you would think, you know, the American founders, they created slavery. It was their idea. And they decided, like, we just need black people to be slaves. They'll never tell you the actual history of it. They'll never tell you the reason they were able to go to Africa and get slaves isn't because they ran around catching them, because there were markets and they could just buy them. And they were being sold into slavery by their fellow Africans. They'll never tell you that. They'll admit it when you point it out. They'll say it doesn't matter, right? But it does matter. They'll never explain to you that slavery was common throughout Western Europe and it was white people holding white slaves. They'll never tell you that in Asia, slavery was incredibly common. They'll never tell you any of those things. Because then you start asking questions like, well, how did that work and how did it end? And you'll find out a lot of the groups that they most wish to disparage are the ones that did the most to end the cycles. They'll never tell you any of this. Because then you might start looking around and going, so are we really free? And somebody said during the lead up to this show, as people were starting to chat in the live feed before I went actual live, well, first we have to define freedom. Well, funny enough, my first bullet point today is, what is liberty? What is freedom? We will answer that question in just a moment. First, let's take care of our sponsors of the day. One of the ways you can expand your freedom today is with digital freedom, by not relying on third-party and cloud services, by having the ability to run your own data services, how you can retrieve your own information across the internet even when you're not at home, how you can manage your own payment systems and payment networks with a Bitcoin node or a Bitcoin Lightning node, how you can use true end-to-end fully encrypted private messaging that's totally anonymous to enable true freedom of communication with anybody else in the world that you want. That's what Start 9 does for you, where you can really take back a lot of control that's been given up to the giant tech providers. If you're using third-party services, then you're using someone else's computer. The way I always say this, there is no cloud. Cloud services are just using somebody else's computer. That's it, which means somebody else has access to your data and can prevent you from having access to your data and services. With Start 9, that all goes away. They also do a great discount for MSB members, such that it will pay for your membership for a couple, 3 years just by using that discount one time. So check them out today at Start 9. And remember, you can also stack discounts on Start 9 by using the Fold card and using a discount card there, getting sats back, getting a discount from MSB, and getting a great product all at the same time. Next up today is KnifeKits.com. You know, one of the reasons that they have been able to take so much freedom from us in society today is because people don't know how to do anything for themselves anymore. And you would be shocked at how much your grandparents and your great-grandparents could do, even before we had all this wonderful technology. That actually makes it easier. Long before there was a YouTube university, you're like, how do I turn the heat up on my water heater, stuff like that. They learned how to do it. They relied on their own kind of friendship and alum network to say, like, hey, you don't have to do that, man. I'll come over and show you how to do that. And hey, I know you're good with drywall, so maybe you come over and help me. And that's about developing hard skills, real world skills. We can do things. A great way to do that is to start learning crafts and how to build things. How about a knife? Check out KnifeKits.com. At KnifeKits.com, you can learn how to build knives starting with a kit, even really cool folders like the one you're looking at right on the screen here. It's not really hard to do, and you can take this to any level you want at KnifeKits. You can get raw materials and, you know, forge your own blades and do all of that, grind removal or what have you. Or you can just get a kit. And some of the kits come, you know, pre-chosen. The scales are pre-shaped like the one you're looking at right now for the folder. But some of those kits are going to come with, you know, you can pick your own handle material and you can do your own, do up your own handles and do your final fit and finish and things like that. It's basically a company that does what it says and says what it does. KnifeKits.com, right in the handle there. They provide kits that let you build knives. They've also been a sponsor of this show for a very, very, very long time, going all the way back, not quite to the first year, but they do go back to the first year that we had sponsors, which is 2009. That's how long Knife Kits has been a sponsor. And real quick before we move on, I did a collaboration with Nicole Sauce a few years ago. And I tasted and chose the beans and went over and over it with her to develop a coffee called Jack's Bourbon Cooled Sumatran. She also brought out coffee tins this year. Right now, it's the annual time where you can get the Bourbon Cooled Sumatran that has my name on it. I personally selected the beans, the amount of bourbon, the roast, all of it. And you can only get it once a year. There's 40 tins available. Just 40 tins, and they're gone again for the year. So check those out at hollerroast.com and try the coffee that I personally curated just for this audience. And Nicole Sauce has that available for you. Just so you guys know, I don't take any riff on that or anything. I don't take any money. She asked me, well, what do you want for doing this? I'm like, send me some coffee. I don't want your money. Right. I believe in helping people and lifting people up in this community, and Nicole's damn well worth doing that for. So if you're looking for a really cool gift with a story behind it, pick up some of the bourbon cooled, and you got a lot of story you can tell with it. You read it on her website as well and learn more. All right, so let's get into this. Let's start off with the question that was kind of pointed out by a listener before we even started talking. Well, what does freedom mean? What does liberty mean? And the reality is this is actually a very difficult question to ask if you're looking for a simple explanation. Because freedom and liberty mean the same thing in the minds of most people when you talk about it at the surface level. But when you try to go deeper, immediately there's this incredible, like, immediate contention, immediate fight. And what I mean by that is I believe personally that freedom and liberty are the ability to do anything you want as long as you don't harm or steal from another person. That's it. That's my entire definition. So if you're sitting over in the corner, and I don't advise you to do this, but snorting methamphetamine until you stroke out, I believe that you're free to do it. I didn't say it was good. I just say it was okay, but I don't think there should be a law to prevent you from doing it. Well, they steal people's TV sets. We'll arrest them for that. See, now you're stealing. Or they go and they break into people's houses. Well, shoot them. They'll stop doing it. Even high. I promise you. Okay? Like, that's my definition. And to me, anything that goes past that, right, is not freedom. So under that definition, are we free right now? Absolutely not. Have we been free in my entire life? No. Have we been free at all since we began as a country? Well, no. So freedom is more something that comes in degrees and how much freedom you have. And the real question to ask yourself, if you really want to think about this the right way, what are you willing to use violence on another person to prevent? That's something people have a real hard time with when you tell them that. So when they say something like, I believe in seatbelt laws, I think that we should cite people for not wearing a seatbelt. They should get a fine for that. If they don't pay the fine, they get another fine for not paying the fine. They don't pay that, they get arrested and thrown in jail until the fine's paid. They're okay with that. So my response to that would be then, so what you're saying is you're willing to use violence on people to make them wear a seatbelt. Oh, you want people to die? No, I actually want people to wear their seatbelts. I think seatbelts are a very common sense safety mechanism. And I think 99.9% of the time, most people wear their seatbelt. Okay? I don't think we need another excuse for a cop to pull somebody over. I don't think we need that. And I am not willing to use violence on somebody to force them to protect themselves. See how simple that is? Now, speed limits. You're endangering other lives. You're endangering other lives. If you pay for access to a racetrack and anybody else on that track knows what, you know, you're going to be there and they're going to be there, or you're by yourself, person who owns the track is willing to let you do it, and you're going to go drive as fast as you can and see if you can handle your car at that speed, I have no problem with it. If you go face pasta into the freaking window, that's your problem. I wish you wouldn't, but I'm not going to use violence to prevent it. But I do think when you endanger other lives, now we have to have at least a conversation about how we manage that. Now, I think in a privately run road system, we'd have many mechanisms for this, and they would probably be more efficient and better than what we currently have. But I am also a pragmatist, and I am okay with the fact that we have things like speed limits, especially speed limits where driving conditions aren't perfectly straight, you know, and perfectly flat. You can see everything, especially in neighborhoods and parking lots, right? I'm okay with that. But is that something you, and then how much violence will you use? Because tell me something that's a law that is enforceable with no violence. And no matter what you say, I'm going to respond with, but what if I still don't do it? And eventually you're going to get to a place where guys with uniforms and guns and pepper spray and other guys and dogs and clubs and tasers and stun guns, right, are going to come take me away against my will and put me in a cage. And even though I think we can come up with a better system, there's a lot of people that when they end up in that cage, I'm like, okay, man, UFA and UFO'd, I don't care. I don't care. I would prefer a better system, but that's the system we have. So that's my definition of freedom. What's yours? What are you willing to use violence on another person? Even though the thing is, people like say, well, I don't do anything violent. Well, you're supporting violence. It's violence by proxy. Just because, like, if you're a mob boss and you're like, whack that guy, you're as responsible for his death as the hit man that pops him in the head. You ordered the hit. When you're like, I think we need a law for this, I think you're saying, I want violence used so that I can have things the way that I want it. I don't care if you like that. I don't care if you agree with it. It's what is. So freedom is subjective. Liberty is subjective. But even within a system that's flawed, you can have a high degree of freedom. The dimmer switch is turned all the way up, and it's giving you as much freedom as the system, the wiring system, and the light bulb will let you have. And I feel like we've had that switch pretty high for a long period in history. And it's a funny thing. If I walk into a room with that dimmer switch and I go all the way down till light goes down at 20% of what it was, everybody's like, whoa, what the hell happened in here? What the hell happened in here? Why is it so dark? Right? That's a, you know, the cloud of fascism or communism or socialism has come, right? And everybody notices. But what happens if I come in and I reduce the brightness of the light in a room by a quarter of a percent every 10 minutes? I could probably reduce the light by 10 to 20% before anybody notices. And half the people, when some of the people are like, hey, man, it's kind of dimmer in here than it was, will be like, no, it's not. Shut up. It's fine. I can see everything. Sound familiar? So that we have to come from that standpoint. And history, the history of freedom and its relationship with government is cyclical. That's another thing we need to understand. So when I say the last free generation, doesn't mean forever. It means forever in our lifetimes and probably that of our great-grandchildren we may never know. But it doesn't, there will always be cycles. There's been dark clouds that have fallen upon totalitarianism that lasted, you know, 500 years or more in certain regions and places in the world. Some thousands of years. But sooner or later, freedom always pulls away. Because sooner or later, totalitarianism is so inefficient that it falls under its own weight eventually. The problem is we're developing all of this technology into this technocratic freaking oligarchy that may actually make totalitarianism efficient. And that's where we're in danger of being the actual last one. I don't think that's going to be the case, but we actually have that danger. And this all revolves around, won't somebody please think of the children, right? Have you ever noticed that every time they really want to get something done, every time there's bipartisan support, by golly, bipartisan support means you're about to get fucked hard. That's what that means, right? The two parties, right? It's really a uniparty, but the two parties that hate each other, that refer to each other, you know, as complete libtard idiots and fascist Nazis, right? Okay. Those parties, when they get like, when there's like 80% or more consensus to something, we're all doing this. There's only two reasons that happens. One, they're all shitting their bricks that you guys are actually going to throw them out of office. And not like this person or that, but like en masse. Like the next election is just going to be a freaking blood fest, right? There's something so strongly supported that manages to worm its way through the system because of somebody like Thomas Massey, like the Epstein list. There's like, I better fucking vote for this because I'm fried if I don't. And you get this overwhelming result, right? Or it is so universally agreed that this increases the power and weight and scope of government that the two warring mafia families agree to it. You know, think about all the people the Orange Man nominated to positions in his cabinet that were a knockdown, drag out fight. And the Democrats, even though they knew he'd get the votes, they did everything they could to drag their feet as long as possible and delay the appointment, right? But no, Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, ba-bam! I think he got 99 votes for confirmation in the Senate, and of course you can't vote for yourself. Now, what does that tell you? He's one of them. And so we have this, again, this relationship between freedom and government that is constantly cycling. And it is constantly always being drugged in the direction of more power for them and opposing more freedom for us. And they almost don't care what freedom they take from you. Just that every, like, you know how I say, like, if you want to get wealthy, end more every day with more Satoshis than you started with, a little more Bitcoin. If you do that long enough, you'll end up wealthy. Right? And every, oh, that's so stupid. If I said dollars, you'd be like, well, yeah. Except the dollar loses value. Right? So there's a little, like, I think the government's like, as long as we take more control, as long as we grow in size and power every year, we're on the right track. I think it's the one thing that all the factions within all the government agree on. I don't see anybody pushing for actual freedom and liberty in our state system other than the true outliers, the Rand Paul, right? The Thomas Massey, those people. That, and that's pretty much it right now. That's all you got. Oh, like this other guy. Yeah, he's a shitbag. I'm sorry. He probably is. Case by case. Maybe in your state legislature, but in the national legislature, forget about it. And what they always do with that, again, is think of the children, think of the children. They'll even name it something like, you know, Samantha's Law or Megan's Law or Tammy's Law or Billy's Law, right? And you, okay, what happened? Well, this kid was, you know, kidnapped in traffic. Right? So this law is all about that? Well, it is, except it isn't, because it's 97 pages. You don't need that many pages to say this thing that's already illegal is actually illegal. And there's like 27 things that have nothing to do with kids. Always the kids, but there's a reason, because the children, in the words of Whitney Houston, really are the friggin' future. They have to be, because you're not, I'm not, right? I'm the future for a couple more decades, if I'm lucky. I might even still be around, but I'll no longer, like, there's a point where you're going to go, Jack, you're not the future anymore. Your day has come and gone. You're just an old pensioner now. And you'll be right. It'll happen to all of us. Any of us will stop being the future at some point. But the five-year-old is your future. The five-year-olds are going to be working their ass off in their 30s to pay for you when you can't work anymore. And if you can control the mind and the direction of the youth, then you can shape the future of the country. This is why every movement, specifically totalitarian movements, has gone after the youth, and specifically the adolescents, to young adults. So they'll start as early as they can. Up until very recently, there's been this protective bubble around like the K to 8. The true children. Because I say kids now. It's funny, isn't it? Like some pervert rapes a 14-year-old and the news is like, he had sex with an underaged woman. There's no such thing as an underage woman. There is a woman and there is a girl. He raped a girl, okay, right? But they'll turn right around, and they'll talk about DACA, and they say, we need to do something for these kids, and some of them are in their fucking 40s. They manipulate this shit, but they're right about the kids, and they want the kids in that about ninth grade to collegiate years. Why do you think they wanted everybody to go to college? Do you think they really thought it was good? Well, they knew they could make money on it. Then you could put them in debt for the rest of their lives. But if you want to indoctrinate them, give them another 4 years of indoctrination away from their parents, where their parents literally see nothing and just trust that that system's the same system they were in. Parents, it is the same system you were in, just worse. Just worse. And you've forgotten how bad it was. Mostly anyway. So they go after the kids. So what did they do to the kids? Specifically, what has been done to our children, maybe forever, but certainly in the last 20 years at a level we've never seen before. Number one, they have taught our children to not value privacy in any way. Zero expectation of privacy. Yes, they've done it with social media, but they've done it very much in the school system as well. Searching all of their shit all of the time. We have to keep drugs out of school, but you haven't. But you put freaking metal detectors in the schools. You set up policies where the kids had no way to expect that somebody wouldn't just go through their locker at random, and yet somehow the school is still full of drugs. Right. So the real purpose then, if the stated purpose has not been met, it has failed, and there's no reason to ever think it will be met, then the next thing you have to say is, well, then that must not actually be the purpose. Right. The purpose of the system is what it does, not what it claims to do. Yeah. Basic systems thinking. The purpose of the system is what it does. So what does all of that, plus the social media, right? What does all of that teach our children? That you don't need to, don't worry about privacy. Don't, I mean, if you got nothing to hide, you got nothing to fear, right? Well, first of all, that's a stupid thing to tell a teenager. If you're a proper teenager, you have plenty to hide. Trust me, when I was 16, I had plenty, 15, 16, plenty to hide, and you did too. That's part of growing up, is learning how to hide it. We have a whole generation and a half now. Not only does not value privacy, has no idea how to obtain it. Even in this digital world, I mean, I just talked about Start 9. We have a bub phone and many other technologies. You can actually have privacy, at least far more privacy than you do otherwise. And yet, I'm going to tell you, most of the people that are actually concerned about it are 30 or older. And a lot of these kids that are 20, 18, 19 years old right now, they're not going to care about it when they're 30. It's been stripped. The next thing is, they have taught our youth to respect authority, right? And I don't just mean like somebody above you. I mean like advice, like what you should and shouldn't do in your life, who to trust with to get information from. They have taught that should be based on titles versus actions and looking at their past results and saying, well, how right are they? If you introduce a person to speak to kids in school today and you say this person has a PhD and whatever the bullshit is they're talking about, those kids immediately just go, oh, okay, let's listen, because, you know, if I'm interested in the thing that you're talking about anyway, and even though I'm not interested, I assume that they do know what they're talking about. I just don't care, right? Well, the first thing I say when somebody says, well, this person is an expert in blah, 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 blah. Really? Okay. What's their track record like? What advice were they giving 10 years ago? And had I taken that advice 10 years ago, would my position in the world be better than it is right now? If the answer to that is no, they're not a fucking expert and they have no fucking authority. That's common fucking sense, guys. That's the first. I'm telling you, when they bring somebody on TV and that news anchor, you know, it's the anchor woman haircut. Every fucking woman on these shows has the same haircut. Maybe it's a little longer, a little shorter, but 99% of them all have the same fucking haircut, right? And they're like, we're bringing on Bill Bullshitter from the Bullshit Campaign on the Bullshit, friggin' Bullshit, and he's a PhD in bullshit. If I'm that anchor woman or anchor dude, the first thing I'll say is, so, hey, can you tell us about some things that you recommended or opinions you gave in the past and how that worked out for you? Because if you can't, then I'm going to shut the interview down because I don't want you. Now, you can't do that in mainstream media, but that should be a requisite piece of thing that we teach our children. Before you take the advice of someone, you should know their track record. Well, they don't give a shit about it. All they care about is how many initials are after their name or what they're the boss. Well, the boss has to be right. They're the teacher. Teacher says the answer. It has to be the answer. I'm sorry. There's some dumbass teachers out there. There's some dumbass bosses. Great ones too, but there's some dumbasses. You can't just defer to titles, to education levels, to credentials. You have to demonstrate competency. They don't care about it. They have been systemically placed in unserviceable debt. And mainly through student loans. We have, you know, convinced these kids that the only way they can succeed is by going to college, and almost none of them can afford to go. Their parents can't afford to write a check. The few that can are the exception. You know, we're talking less than 5% of society. But it's not just that. Do you know what happens at college campuses and did more than 30 years ago? This little piece of information I'm about to give you here, I got from one of my girlfriends before I met Dorothy, and Dorothy and I have been together for 29 years. So we're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of 33-ish years ago. And then she had come out of school. She took 5 years to get through school, not four. In her defense, she had 2 degrees, which she would tell you that within 5 minutes of meeting her, part of why it probably didn't work out for us. But what she told me, and she had been working for a couple years. So, you know, we're going back almost 40 full years that this practice was already firmly in place, right? We're going back to like the late 80s with this practice. She'd say, well, you go to college And when you took your student loan out, your credit score went up because you have debt and it's fully serviced because you don't have any payments due until you graduate. Credit card companies would set up tables on campus, bring, you know, call kids over, give them a free little mini football with their school name on it or something, and say, hey, you want to get a credit card? I don't think I can get one. Oh, yeah, you can. And so these kids were being put into credit card debt while they were accumulating student loan debt because you're an idiot and you don't have an income, but yet somebody gave you a credit card. And so that's just the beginning. Once you have people into debt slavery, they'll do anything to basically not completely destroy themselves with it. Now, this gets even worse, though, because in spite of the credit card debt, the car debt, right, and all the other debt we get to young people, and they do it specifically. They want to do it to you as quickly as possible because either you figure out how to service the debt and you take on more, or you remain a slave for the rest of your life. Either one they're happy with because you're a cash cow for them after that. And the individual lenders don't care about the individual they lend to. They want the whole, like the rising tide floating all boats. That works for them really, really well. But they've been convinced the debt's necessary because they need the degree. And I've been saying this is bullshit, and this bullshit's going to come to a head soon for a long time. Well, friends and neighbors, look what just came out. I'm reading a headline for those listening to the audio only. High school grads now find jobs faster than college grads for the first time since the 1970s. Friends and neighbors, what happened in 1971? I won't even go into that today. I'm just saying there's a correlation there. So right now, a person without a college degree can find a job easier than somebody with one. Now, I'm going to tell you there are some mitigations to that. One is, well, what job? And the reality is, yes, there's probably jobs that are better jobs to have, even as first jobs, that you can obtain with a degree that are difficult to obtain without a degree. But there's another side to this. The high school graduate is willing to take the jobs that don't. And a lot of the college grads have been had so much smoke blown up their fucking asses that they think it's beneath them to take a job that doesn't require a degree until they're about 3 years post college and no one wants to hire them. And instead of taking a job that would lead them to a decent career path, they're you know, making lattes at Starbucks. But can you understand what that means? How earth shifting that is? We have now moved, and I'm going to say it's only become more the case. It's only going to become more of the case. And this is an interesting thing. I just happen to be reading a book published in 1922 right now. That's kind of my book that I'm, you know, my next book in my process. I'm always reading something. My Life and Work by Henry Ford. When Ford started Ford Motor Company, and all the way up until the 20s, this was still the case just based by reading his book, you just show up there and say, I want a job. Assuming there was one station open at the bottom, come on in, fill out some paperwork, let's put your ass to work. And everybody started at the bottom. Didn't matter what, you could have been a machinist already. You could have been a tool and die maker already. Before they would even consider you for that elevated position of a tool maker or die maker, something like that, they would put you at the bottom. You'd be putting bolts in a can or something, or screwing something on a magneto. They want to get a look at you first at the lowest paid position. And then they did want to know, like, do you have any skills that are relevant to what we do? And that way, when they wanted to call somebody up to the next level, they knew, like, okay, one, motivation and ethics and all. But if somebody already has some experience, then that's the person we're going to go get. But you could just start. Do you know why? The reason is simple. They had so refined the processes in the plant that the vast majority of the jobs required 1 to 3 days to teach somebody how to do. And if you have that, why do you care what they did before? And I mean, they really didn't care. They didn't care. Did you go to jail? Doesn't mean you'll go again. If you show up on time and do, and you could go in at the bottom and move fairly rapidly up in the organization in pay and in quality of work. Some people apparently didn't want to. He said there were people like, this guy shows up every day. He seems like a solid dude. He always does good work, always keeps his area machine clean. He's always there. He gets along with everybody, doesn't cause any problems. And we talked to him about moving. He didn't want to do it. and everybody was okay with it. But the reason was that everything was so simplistic. The process was leaned out that a body was a body was a body. We're taking a lot of things that have been high tech in the past, and with the aid of technology and AI, we're creating that environment. So why, if I can hire a person with a high school education that's 18 years old and motivated as shit and is just happy to have the job, or I can hire a 22, 23-year-old college student that thinks their degree makes them part of the, in their own words, most educated generation in history, who do you think I'm going to hire? I'm hiring the younger kid that's hungry. By the time that kid's 22, he'll run circles around the one that's 22, 23 right now with a degree that doesn't mean anything to me. And the more we automate process, the more we make what was complicated easy to do, the more that will be the case. The more that will be the case. We have also made these young people, and this does not include my generation, it does include a lot of the next one, the millennials, way more comfortable than they should have ever been made. I think that boomers and Xers, especially older Xers, what we did is kind of looked at the hardness of our childhood and thought, I don't want things to be that hard for my kid. And out of a benevolent, well-meaning nature, we made their lives comfortable. And that just continued to get stacked over time. And then the schools got involved. And next thing you know, we have kids that are playing sports and they don't keep score. So nobody gets their feelings hurt. And it's a tie. So everybody wins and stuff like that. And it just got worse and worse and worse. And the problem with a child always being comfortable is that they don't know how to handle discomfort. And the real world is discomfort. You are never, ever, ever, and I mean ever, going to live a life in total comfort the entire time. I don't care if you're rich, right? You're going to get hurt physically. You're going to get hurt emotionally. You're going to get hurt spiritually. You're going to get your feelings hurt, for God's sakes. You're going to be really hot when you don't want to be. You're going to be really cold when you don't want to be. And, you know, I'd say people my age and older and even a little bit younger, we grew up with, you know, that was just like, that's the way it is. You're not comfortable. Tough shit. I don't want to hear about it. Go on about your life. And we overcompensated with these younger. So then the schools, like I said, everybody else just piled on it. But there's something more insidious than just the comfort. It's they were given expectations of eternal comfort, that this would never end, right? When you were a kid, if you're my age, and if you said to any adult, it's not fair, what was the first fucking thing out of their mouth? I mean, you weren't done with what you were saying, and it was like a return smash serve, man. Like, you serve that ball up, and you got freaking John McEnroe back there blasting you in the face with that ball. What was it, right? Life's not fair, right? Life's not fair. It's not fair. Life's not fair. It was instant. And today, when a kid says it's not fair, there's so many people, not everybody, but so many adults that are like, let's make you feel better about it. Let me show you why it really is fair. No, it's not fair. Not supposed to be. Life isn't fair. Your parents, your grandparents were right. Life isn't fair. Because if it was fair, the person who worked the hardest would always do the best. The person that worked the smartest would always do the best. And generally speaking, hardworking, smartworking people do better. They don't always do the best. Right? And then sometimes things do happen. It's nobody's fault. It just did. You got sick. You know, through no real fault of your own, you got injured. A company that you worked for got dissolved. Like, life's not fair. That means you have to be prepared. Not only prepared for when things go wrong, but prepared emotionally to deal with it when things go wrong. We've given them not only the expectation of comfort, but of happiness. So, of course, they're miserable. You know, it's one thing to be unhappy. It's another thing to believe yourself, like you have a God-given right to happiness, not the pursuit of, but actual happiness, and never be happy. You're like, something's wrong. Either it's me, which no one ever wants to say, or everybody's a big meanie and somebody needs to fix it for me. Gee, I wonder why they can't do anything for themselves, right? They've also been taught to value protection above vigilance. I've said this before, but people say today all the time, it's the government's job above everything else to keep us safe. My grandfathers, both of them, on both sides, two very different men, very, very different men in profession. You know, one was a lifetime military officer. The other one served as long as they made him when he was drafted into World War II. Okay. One was enlisted. One was an officer, an intelligence officer, and a sailor. Yeah. One was a coal miner, and the other one was deeply involved in security and security administration after his time in the military. Right? Couldn't be more different. They would have both looked at you like you had a lizard crawling out of your freaking ear if you told them the primary responsibility of government was to protect you. I said, you don't know what government does at all. You're out of your mind. Now that's just taken for granted. And that is valuing security over personal vigilance, which means you're always going to be dependent. And the younger you are, this is true of all of us, by the way. Before you think I'm just beating up on 20-year-olds. It's just right now, the younger you go, the worse the problem becomes. It's not like it's absent in my generation. There's plenty of Gen Xers who are absolute socialist retards. They exist. And God knows there's plenty of boomers that are socialist retards. They exist too. It's just worse the younger you go. It's an absence of life experience plus refined conditioning, right? The methods by which we condition the youth have been refined now, heavily refined, over the last 70 years. It's always been there, but the last 70 years, and specifically the last 50, it's gotten very precise and very scientific. They've also been taught what? That prejudice of one group amounts to privilege for another. When you look at the civil rights movement of the 60s, which ain't as long ago as people tend to try to make it out to be, the people behind the civil rights movement did not want to drag society down to their level so everybody would be equal. They wanted to be allowed to rise up to the level of society so that everybody could have equal opportunity. The number one champion of that concept in America was Martin Luther King, right? And that's the I Have a Dream speech. That one day we will be judged by the content of our character, not the color of our skin. There is nothing about the words and work of King that are in any way congruent with the people that claim to be still fighting his fight today. Because you can't say like, oh, you're privileged. How about, you know, if anything, I have things in my life closer to the way they should be for everybody than being privileged. Like, being left alone is not a privilege. It's a human existence right. So why don't we get that for your side too? Why don't we get that for your group or subgroup too? Instead of removing oppression and removing discrimination, the solution is reverse oppression and discrimination. And the people who will be most discriminated against that are young are calling for their own discrimination because they've had 15 to 20 years of self-induced guilt training to teach them to be guilty about themselves. It's a sickness. And it makes for a very weak group of young generations. Okay. And the other side of this, they also deeply believe in things that simply are not true. Now, I don't want to get into a debate with anybody. I don't even bother with it anymore about climate change. Let's say that it is as big a problem as they say. It isn't. But even if it was, you still have 16-year-olds that will get in people's face on the street screaming the chant of what? We only have 10 years to act. Okay. In 1989, if you doubt me when I say this, I encourage you to look it up. Just Google it. Just effing Google it, right? In 1989, an article was released across the Associated Press, which is, you know, like you got Reuters and you got the AP. These are the organizations that put out news that other, all the major news, I just pick it up and rerun it. Or they go, oh, that's a hot topic now. And then they go do extra work and then they do their own version of it, right? This is the one of the primary sources of news in the world. In 1989, they put out a claim that we only had 10 years to act before entire nations would be wiped off the face of the earth and islands would be covered with water. Okay, that was over 40 years. It's about 40 years ago. So when you have a young person, and I admire their passion, I just think it's misdirected, that will chant that phrase still to this day and believe that you're literally Hitler because you don't believe it. Okay, that's a divorce from reality. That's a divorce from reality. It's like, kid, they were saying that before you were born. If you're 20, they were saying that more than 20 years before you were even born. And if you ask these kids something like, hey, let me ask you a question. How many years does it have to be before that doesn't happen, before you're willing to question it? They'll say like 10 years, because I know we only have 10 years. What about 40? Yeah, well, it's been 40. Then they get really mad and they yell and scream because they don't see. There's so many people in your government, these billionaires that are part of the oligarchy that have been using this as a leverage point for all this time. They know they're lying. Our youth believe this shit. And when people deeply and passionately believe things that are only not true, but easily disproven, you have a fractured society headed straight to hell. And that's where we're at. I'm sorry, we do. And there's many other examples, right? Who took to the masking like no other group? Like even when they listed it, they were like goofing around and still wearing their mask. Kids, it's amazing to me. About 2.5 months into this stupidity, Governor Abbott here in Texas signed an executive order that said people cannot be required to wear masks, period. The end. It is over. No more. You can't do it. You can suggest it, but you can't do it. So you start going out to restaurants after that. And of course, you're not wearing your mask until you sit down, right? Like some dumbass. Right? Apparently the COVID is only up here at like 5 foot. When we sit down, it goes over our heads, right? Like, so you, and everybody's back to like normal life. And there's kids everywhere with masks on. Because they believed it deeply. They were told it was true. A lot of times they're like kind of like, you know, Santa, right? Parents said it was true because the parents were like, I just need Johnny and Susie to put their freaking mask on so we can go to the store. So I have, even if I don't believe it, maybe I have to tell them that so they'll shut up and do it. I'm sure some of that happened. I'm laughing about something somebody said, but I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole with it. And this is all by design. The lunatics run the asylum. In fact, see, in the beginning, you had to have pure activist propagandists running the schools, running the classrooms, and running the organizations. You had to have people at the helm of the ship that knew what they were doing. Because you had to have somebody that would, when anybody questioned it, give them a little rap and then invoke peer pressure to pull it back down. And there weren't enough people that really believed it to get it done at the time. So you had to find people that were there for the purpose of the agenda, which is Marxism in America. Let's just be honest. That's the agenda. Marxism in America. Marxism blended with fascism. New age. It's basically neo-fascism is what the agenda is. So those people believed in the agenda. But eventually they created enough people that believed in the mythology that now they'll carry the agenda forward without even knowing what it is. You brainwash enough people, then you have the lunatics that can, you can turn over the asylum to the head lunatics. The people that are not quite as crazy or maybe really crazy, but useful, leveraged properly. And now you have the teacher that believes the bullshit she's telling a kid, even though she should know better because she's 50 like me. I'm older than 50, but let's ignore that. Like, she's 50 like me. She was here in 1989 when they said that bullshit. She's been saying it for 40 years, but she can't not believe it anymore. This is what we're into. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the movie 1984 or the book 1984, depending on how you consumed it. But there's some things that you should realize about 1984 that, especially if you watch the movie, you won't understand. If you watch the movie, the sun never shines. Everything is gray. It's all dank and dark. You get a feeling like the walls are wet. It's just, ugh. Well, this is the cinematography trying to create a feeling as you watch the movie. But fascism, including neo-fascism, doesn't look like that. It looks bright and shiny and happy for the people that do well. And there's always the promise that you'll become one of them someday. If you think that under Hitler in Germany, that until bombs started falling, if you think things look bad, you don't understand history at all. Now, if you were one of the oppressed, I'm not saying it was good. I'm saying it didn't look bad to the observer. The observer who went through World War I, couldn't find a job, and all of a sudden they have a job, their kids have jobs, their country's standing on its own feet again, industry standing up. Some of the greatest scientific advancements in the world are being made. It looks pretty good if you're in the place for it to look good. It's not like the weather, despite what they tell you, the weather won't change. It won't suddenly become overcast 360 days a year. That's not going to happen. And not everything's going to be gray. And everything's going to be not everything will have the feeling of dystopia in a dystopian world. You're living in it right now, in case you doubt me. So that's the first thing to understand about 1984 is it won't look like the cinematography of the movie. If you read the book, there's enough evil behind the scenes going on that they don't try to invoke that into the book. That's trying to condense a big, thick book into an hour and 45-minute movie and convey a feeling and emotion. Number two is, in 1984, you had a screen, right? A screen up on every wall. Or in every house, there was a screen. At work, there was a screen. The screen was the means by which the party put the propaganda in front of you, and you were not allowed to turn off the screen. Turns out that some of the higher officials had times when they were allowed to turn out the screen, but not you. Do we have any screens like that today, where you're not allowed to turn the screen off? No. I don't know anywhere where you can't turn off the screen if you want to. But I know a lot of screens that never get turned off. Yeah. In fact, I want you to think about a line from the book of Revelation in the Bible. Now, you guys know, if you don't know, I am not a religious person. I classify myself religiously as a deist, and I respect other faiths. As long as your faith doesn't say it's okay for you to go kill people because they don't believe what you believe and shit like that, then I'm fine with it. As long as you're not using your faith as justification to do things that are immoral, I'm fine with it. And that includes all of them, because plenty of people practice all the faiths and don't do that, okay? So I'm not picking on any individual faith. But I'm also not preaching at you. I want you to understand that. I just want to point out an irony that's pretty interesting to me. In the book of Revelation, there is a line that no man can buy or sell unless he receives the mark of the beast on his right hand or his forehead. And I'm not going to explain what I'm doing right now for the people that are on the audio only, but I hope for you guys on the video, I'm making my point. No man can buy or sell unless he receives mark of the beast in his right hand or on his forehead. You do with that as you will. But the screen, and that might, for those on the audio only, that might help you figure out what I just did. You can't turn off the screen. Well, how many people literally can't turn the screen off now? I don't mean that someone will yell at them for turning the screen off. I don't mean that they'll get a fine for turning the screen off. I don't mean that they have to buy quiet time, like in Black Mirror, in the second episode of Black Mirror, to turn the screen off, right, or to go commercial free. I mean, they can't turn off the screen the way that I mean some people can't stop taking meth, right? No one makes them take meth, but they cannot stop without assistance. How many people cannot stop looking at the screen? How many people have kids and the kids do not have access to their screen when they're in school? Their phone is locked up. When they get out of school, boom, they're in the screen. And if you're picking them up from school, as soon as they're in the car with you, they're not talking to you. They're in the screen unless you make them put it down. And they get angry if you make them put it down. They exhibit all the aspects of an addict. Give them 5 seconds of boredom and they're in the screen. And don't blame the kids. Plenty of adults do it as well. Plenty of adults do it. Couple sitting on a couch, They're watching something on TV because it's the modern era. We can pause shit. One of them has to go to the bathroom. So they pause the TV while one of them goes to the bathroom. So they're watching one screen. When the partner comes back, they're in the phone. They can't wait 45 seconds for somebody to take a piss and come back without. And then, oh, I got to just tell this one thing about. How much better is it to have people enforce the totalitarianism upon themselves than to have to do it for them? Kind of reminds you of slavery. Like modern slavery is based on debt and conditioning. You'll do the work because you have to pay for yourself, and you'll take on debt because you can't afford everything you want, which will make you work longer and harder for less than you're worth. Modern slavery. Because they figured out. I'm telling you guys right now, Civil War, not in the United States. Slavery was on its last legs anyway. Slavery is an expensive system in a world with any legitimate alternative. As soon as you can do the work of 100 men with one machine, slavery is financially not valuable anymore. If you look at the few places in the world that are fucked up enough to still have slavery left in it, you know what they don't have? Technology. They don't have the technology availability that we had in the United States in 1955. They really don't. Or they're doing a few things that technology doesn't do yet. And I'll leave that alone because that's nasty. Okay? So, we need to understand that we have been conditioned into a multiple forms of slavery that we enforce upon ourselves. And we enforce upon each other. Because God, you know, God forbid somebody actually break out of the normal, everybody comes down on them. Who you vote for? I'm voting for this person. Why are you doing that? And they argue a little bit and they go on with their lives. You want to get them really pissed off? Well, I'm not voting. I don't vote. Now that you see, it's one thing you vote for the wrong person. But when you don't vote, or what is your opinion on this issue? Some hot button political, I don't give a fuck. Now they're way more mad than you taking the opposite side. You have to be in the game. You have to play the part of the slave or the other slaves get angry at you. So we're enforcing it upon ourselves and we're enforcing it upon each other so they don't have to. It's actually a brilliant psychopathic system that they've built. It's up to you if you want to separate from it, though. And then one of the things we really need to understand is in the book they always say what? The party told you. The party told you. The party told you to ignore the evidence of your own eyes and your own ears. Right? The party, the party, the party. So what do we think? Well, that must be, if you're a Republican, like, that must be the Democrats. They're the socialist Marxist tards. Libtarded socialist Marxists they are, right? And if you're a Democrat and you read that and it resonates with you, it must be the Republicans. They're the ones with the orange Hitler. They're the fascists. The party is the state. The party is the state. That's it. It shouldn't be the party. If the book was modernized, the state told you to ignore the evidence of your own eyes and ears. It's the state. And then we're self-editing the dictionary. Even those of us who think it's stupid, we stop using words because they told us to, because we're ostracized for it. I won't. That's fucking retarded. And no matter how many of you tried to actually edit that word out of my vocabulary for 17 years, you guys tried. I have a child and they have, or I know this person and they have somebody with Down syndrome or whatever. Like, would you call them retarded? No, then shut up. It's a perfectly useful word. If you're in your 50s, you know how we use that word. Who do we call retarded? Our friends. When our friend who is fully capable of not doing some stupid shit did some stupid shit, we called them retarded as a good-natured insult. I'm not going to stop using it. I will never stop using it. And if you don't like it, you can fuck right off. Okay? Because I'm not going to edit the dictionary. I'm not going to not say words because, oh, we don't say that. You can't say idiot. I mean, I give Musk some shit for not really making X the free speech zone he claimed he was going to. But at least I can say retarded and idiot without having my post reach limited beyond what they limit me for already. I had one of the people that's been on the show They just started up a group on Reddit. I don't know why. I don't know who the fuck uses Reddit anymore except a bunch of idiots. They said, well, it was a mass email to a whole group of influencers that they've worked with. You know, we have this whole thing. We're starting up this discussion group on Reddit. Will you help us get it off the ground? I'm like, bro, I can't. I'm banned from Reddit. Here's the funny fucking thing. I've never posted on Reddit. I've never had a Reddit account. The only way I know I'm banned is a few weeks ago, I was searching for something, and one of the Google results was a Reddit thread. So I clicked on it, and it came up and says, I'm blocked by IP. Yeah, freedom, my ass, right? Like, we are self-editing the dictionary, and then private people and private entities and organizations are enforcing that, even when the person they're enforcing it has never done anything to them. I can't have done anything to anybody on Reddit because I've never done anything on Reddit other than read some things and go, wow, that's retarded. But I'm not going to stop saying retard, and I'm not going to stop saying idiot, and I'm not going to stop saying a lot of words that people find offensive. A word should not be offensive by being a word. A word should only be offensive in the context of which it is used. But that's not how editing the dictionary works in 1984, and it's not how editing the dictionary works in 2025, except instead of the state editing it, we're self-editing. Okay? And then the endless war, right? That's a theme that runs right through 1984, and the war that is being invoked, the name of it and the enemy changes with no explanation. We've always been at war with East Asia. We've always been at war with Eurasia. Okay. Here's the real secret. The endless war is not just foreign. Foreign wars are wonderful mechanisms of control because the war is way over there. And you could justify all kinds of things here with people who never see over there. But the endless wars are here. War on poverty. That's been going on since forever. I mean, the first person that really did it was FDR. But the person most known for kind of invoking it that way, Lyndon Johnson. A lot of y'all weren't even born before that guy died, let alone when he was in power. Right? War on drugs. Thank you, Ronnie and Nancy. Thanks a lot. The war on drugs. There's more drugs than there's ever been, despite how much money and how many lives have been destroyed with the war itself versus the drugs. I have to tell you, I think without a war on drugs, we'd have less drugs than we do today. Hey, marijuana today is not what we smoked when we were in high school. First of all, bitch, you never smoked anything. Stop using the word we, okay? I get a look at you. You have no idea what you're talking about. And second of all, it's a war on drugs that created weed that's like 14 gazillion times stronger than the weed we had in 1985. Because they put in laws, and the more you had, the more trouble you got. And so just like prohibition against alcohol, the country went from being a nation that mostly drank wines and ciders and beers to a nation that was wrecking its liver with hard alcohol. Because you could fit more in a bottle that way, more of the alcohol part, the part that was prohibited. You see how that works? It's not hard, but you can now declare war on anything. We have a war on terror. What the fuck does that mean? What is a terrorism is a concept. If you declare war on a concept or an idea, you can stay at war with it forever, even when there's no one left to fight. That's how you control shit. You convince people there's a war on a virus. Remember all the talk? Remember all the bullshit talk about how you were a hero? You were going to be cast as a hero equal to the people that went through the Great Depression that never actually ended? Right? I was just going to say this. Dev here, or Dev says, blocked by Reddit, the highest honor. Congratulations. I think I get the, you know what? I never thought of it that way. I think I get a super high honor. I didn't just get blocked by Reddit. I got blocked by Reddit without actually ever being on Reddit. Somebody with some power at Reddit found out who I was and said, this motherfucker shall never be here. That's how crazy that shit is. That's nuts, right? But yeah, the endless war. You could keep things over. Remember they did? Like, we're getting, what was the terminology that they used? Like, we're going into like January, February, March of 2020. Wartime footing. We're going to shut everything down, but we're going to ramp everything up. Well, how's that work? It doesn't matter. They won't know. Right? We're all in this together. They use the same propaganda they used to sell war bonds in World War II. That's what they did. And people bought it. The endless wars are not just foreign. They're often domestic. And they're often against ideals and concepts and nebulous things that can never even be gone to war with, let alone defeated. War with the virus. But many believed it. So what can we do about this? Well, we do need to focus on ourselves and our kids. So I'm going to come at this from telling you what you need to do with your kids and the youth. But it applies to you too, even if you're 60. Okay. Number one, you need to teach children that freedom is precious and doesn't come from a state. That first and foremost, you're not free because you're an American. Okay. Because that infers that being an American creates freedom. That infers that America can't possibly be unfree when in many ways it is unfree. And in many ways it has been unfree. The America of the past wasn't free, but the America of today, we are free, except for this one marginal group of people, which you need less freedom so they can have more freedom. That's how they sell it to you. So we need to teach kids that freedom is precious. It is innate and God-given right. And again, I'm not a religious person, so I don't mean that the way some preacher might. But I'm okay with their version of it because it works. It works for everybody. As a deist, I believe there is a creator, an architect, a consciousness, a first cause. I don't claim to even know what it is, but I believe without it, I wouldn't be here. That the world is, the universe is too mathematically perfect to be by chance. That there's too much that can't be explained without something beyond what we see. If you don't believe even that, it still works. When I say God-given, then that means however you believe we got here, by our own existence, the evolutionary process, if that's how you, if you believe the most boring, dry, it all just happened by chance, because if there's a gazillion, bazillion chances, one of them will work. Okay, fine. Then by your evolution, by your existence as a being, you are to be free. You're born into this world. The only people you should ever experience captivity from is your parents because you require it. And all new higher life forms are born into captivity. A puppy or a kitten is born into captivity. It's just less than yours. Because the longer you take to grow and develop, the longer you need to stay in captivity to be protected. You're not born into captivity. You're born free. There's a song about it. Really? Take a one-day-old baby and set it free, and what'll happen? It'll die. When that one-year-old baby gets to where it can roll over and sit up and crawl and walk, first thing it does is starts trying to kill itself on every corner in the house and every wall socket. And when we can't constantly watch them, we put them in a thing that gives them some freedom and mobility, but it holds them in one place. And what do we call it? Fucking pen. What does the cribs look like? Jails, because they are. They're too high wall for them to climb out of, hopefully. And they can see through, but they can't get out. Even looks like a jail, because it is. It's not even bad. But that's the only captivity a person should ever experience in their life, assuming they don't harm others sufficiently to give up their own rights. Yeah? Simple. But no. We have our freedom slowly eroded across time. The freedom that your grandfather had is inconceivable to your grandchild. They can't even comprehend that freedom. They probably can't comprehend yours if you're my age. I remember my grandson saying to me, he watched something, some videos about what it was like to be a kid in the 80s. He goes, did you really just get on your bike and just go places? I'm like, yeah. He goes, like when you were like 15, 16? I'm like, no, when we were like 10. It's like, well, who was there? Our other friends? Any older people? Some of the friends were older, some were younger. Where'd you go? Wherever we wanted. He couldn't even, like, and his life is freer than most kids his age. He couldn't even grok For him, it wasn't Stranger Things, but that's actually why I stopped watching that show. I stopped watching that show because it was an okay show. It got kind of, I don't know, the longer it went, the more ridiculous it seemed to get. And it also seemed like a lot of the things they do with kids, they take so long between seasons now. The kid's like fucking 25 and they're still supposed to be in high school. And I don't dig that. But part of what I didn't like about Stranger Things was it was very 80s, which is when it's set. And they did a good job of it. And that freedom that those kids had, that's kind of what I say we're the last free generation. It's kind of what I'm talking about. If you grew up at that time, no matter how much freedom we still have to lose, all of that's gone. There's very little of it left anyway. Mom, be back by dinner. Yeah, that's exactly it. When the light comes on, you go to the house, right? When the street light comes on, you got a couple minutes to get home. That's how that worked. We also need to teach our kids skills so they can adapt where others fail and when they can handle their own failure and have resiliency. The less you know how to do, the more things in your life are a problem. Like, I have a lot of shit that breaks on my little farm. It's not a problem. It's an inconvenience. It's a pain in the ass, but it's not a problem. If there's a thing that's broke that I can fix, it's not a problem. It's a pain in the ass. I'd prefer not to have it be a pain in the ass, but it's much better than not be a problem. Yeah, I mean, that's not hard to understand. But when everything in your life that goes wrong requires an expert, a guy, a technician, somebody you call, then everything's a problem and you are brittle as fuck in life that way. It's hard to adapt. And you don't have a value add to sell yourself to a customer or to an employer then if you don't know how to do things. An employer who's hiring you to do something that you're able to convey to them, like, I can do the thing you're asking, but I'm adaptable. You need something done, give it to me. I'll fucking figure it out. You become much more valuable. And once you get in, if you actually prove that that's true, oh, this thing broke. I got it. We're going to call Bob. He'll be here in 3 days. I'll fix the copier. Whatever it is. Like, all of a sudden, your stock value, your par value goes up. So you're better off in and of it by yourself with just taking care of your life. But from an ability to market yourself and sell your skill set, the more you can do, the more you have to sell, the bigger your inventory, the bigger your catalog. So think of it this way. If you come into my store and you say, I want to buy a cell phone, I'm like, hey, great. We have the iPhone 16. And you're like, I'm really not an Apple guy. Well, that's all we sell. Oh, you only sell Apple. Yep. Doesn't say Apple, but that's all we have. Like, well, yeah, and I don't even know what the newest one is. I think it's a 16. And you're like, well, you know what? That's really expensive, and I do need a phone today. And I guess I'd be okay with an Apple, but do you have like one a few, like that one's too, the screen's too big, or it's the wrong color, or whatever? Nope. Got the Apple iPhone 16 Plus in black. I'm going to sell a lot less phones than if I'm like, what are you looking for in a phone? Let's start off with the big ones. Are you an Android, or are you an iPhone guy? Right? Or are you some other brand? I'm Android. Okay. What's most important? Like, you see what I mean? Like, as soon as I have inventory, I can start being a consulting salesperson. Is data storage capacity more important to you? Are you somebody that wants to stream video? Are you really concerned about the photography capabilities? Do you want a big screen because you want to sit around and use it like a computer or a TV set? You're concerned about compatibility with like Bluetooth keyboards and stuff like that. Or are you more into like you want a compact phone because you're really going to use it mostly for text messages and social media and stuff like that, but you want it to be compact so it's easy to carry around. And I have a much better chance of landing the deal. And that's just with just cell phones. Now, if I have accessories and chargers and docks, and everything, now I've got other things to sell. But if I really want to have the ability to sell to the most number of people, who do you think does more in sales in a given week? The AT&T phone store or Home Depot or Walmart, right? Because everybody has something they can buy there. So when you develop a broad skill set, you become marketable in that you can go, well, I can do that. I can do that. X Hendrix here says, I got this. That is when you are an employer and you're paying salaries and you have a problem and you don't think any of your people can take care of that problem and it's actually obstructing workflow, and that young person says, I got this, boss. I'm telling you, if you never knew that guy's name because you have a big enough organization, he's under three people before he gets to you, you're like, who is that kid? Who is that kid? Right? No, I do not have an episode that discusses crypto tax software. I don't. You don't need crypto tax software. You need to understand tax law. And stop buying crypto. It's shitcoins. Bitcoin only. Anyway, moving on, right? Help them define what freedom is for them. Don't dictate it to them. Help them figure out their own restrictions. The reason you need restrictions is so you can do eloquent design. This is one of my favorite Jeff Lawton quotes of all times, okay? That the more restrictions placed upon a design, the more eloquent the design if the designer is good at his task. And he was talking about, like, I'm designing a property. And let's say I got unlimited budget. I got 40 acres. It's got nice slope, but it's mostly flat. I got roads all around it. And I can do anything I want. I could come up with some really cool shit if I'm a good designer, but it actually is hard. It's hard. If you give me a small suburban yard and there's certain things I cannot do, and I look at the way the shadows fall and the wind and a site map and a sector map, and I do all that, and it's like I'm not going to have five zones because it's only a half acre, right? The design sort of just reveals itself really quickly. So when I get on that great big 40-acre square or 160-acre square, right, I have to go, wait a minute. I have no, there are no restrictions, so I have to self-impose restrictions. I have to start with myself if I own the property or the client. How much do you want to work? What do you want to do? What do you not want to do? I literally, to make the design, I have to impose restrictions upon the design so the design will reveal itself. So when you tell somebody what they can and can't do with their freedom, you are imposing restrictions. And when that person is a 14-year-old, you should. They're not ready to do it for themselves yet. But as they mature, again, I've always said that if you're doing your job as a parent, and I don't mean you'll ever not be their mom or their dad, but if you're doing your job as a parent properly, what you're doing is slowly over time working yourself out of a job from the standpoint of the disciplinarian. If you're telling your kid what they can and cannot do when they're 30 years old, what the fuck are you even doing? And if they require, what the fuck did you do wrong? You have no business telling another 30-year-old man or woman what they need to do. If they come to you and say, Dad, Mom, I'd like your advice, you should give it to them. They're do that from you. Absolutely, they're do that from you, okay? But if you're like, hey, I heard you're going to do this, don't do that. You're not. If you even go to them and say, hey, look, I'm going to tell you, you know, if the kid's 20 and going to join the military, I was in the military. Let me tell you what it's really like and what I know for people that are currently serving about what it's really like versus what the recruiters said to you, and then make your own decision. That's fine. You will not, or you absolutely should. Like, you got no... You get one life where you get that kind of totalitarianism over. So in your own life, if you do not impose restrictions upon yourself, you will fuck your life to hell. I'm sorry, you will. Like, if you just eat everything that tastes good, you're going to be a fat ass with kidney failure. If you drink like a fish every night, you're going to blow your liver up and die young. If you smoke three packs a day, you might not die of lung cancer, but your probability goes way up and your overall health is going to suffer. Like, there's certain things you just can't do. If you spend all your money, eventually when you can't work anymore, you're not going to have a pot to piss in. Right? If you spend all your money, maybe it's not even when you can't work anymore, when we have a recession and you lose your job and it takes you a year to find one, you're going to be a hard way. You see what I mean? We have to, like, I am not saying freedom means the absence of restriction. What I'm saying is freedom is the ability to provide your own restrictions with your own design for your own life. And so we need to help them define freedom for themselves so when they figure out what freedom means to them and what they want from life, they can implement their own restrictions to get there. And you need that fucking too, okay? You need that too. I don't knife hand a lot of times anymore. But you do. You need to know, right? Some of y'all know what this shit means, right? Some of you don't. You need to have discipline, and discipline is the implementation of restriction. One of my restrictions right now in my life and my self-development is I get the fuck out of bed at 5 a.m. But that's not that big of a restriction. That's not that. I've always been an early riser. The restriction is I have a regimented first hour of my morning that is for me. It's a gift to me that I owe myself to follow. It can even change, but it's by design, not because I don't feel like it that day. I think I could tweak this and I'll get more out of it. Okay, that's fine. But that restriction I put in place, right? When I go out to eat and they say, do you want a margarita today? And it's not a day to have a drink. No, I have to have that restriction for myself. So we define freedom by developing the maturity to put restrictions in place, not to prevent or limit our liberty, but to obtain that which we want in the world. See how simple that is? It's dramatically simple, but it's incredibly deep and complex at the same time, which is how you know it's true. When something is dramatically simple to comprehend, but still incredibly complex in its nature and its implementation, you have found true truth. You have found a real truth. You have found a profound truth that when ignored hurts you and when embraced helps you. So help them define freedom. Don't dictate it to them. And like I said, this is for you too. So don't let other people dictate what freedom is to you. Dictate it to yourself. Encourage independent learning and systems thinking. One of my favorite things that Nicole Sauce says is a very simple thing. Again, I love simple things, right? And she says, but why? But why? But why? And she says it almost like a child. But why? Well, I can't do this. But why? I've heard her do that to so many people at workshops, and I know exactly what she's doing, because what she's really saying is, can you really not do that? Or what you're really saying is, I don't want to do the things necessary to get that done. Let's just be clear, because if that's what you're saying, I'm not going to waste any time or energy telling you how you can do it. If you really don't think you can do it, then you tell me why, and if the reasons you tell me aren't real, I'll let you know. We all need to be doing that to ourselves all the time, right? But why? You can't do this. Why not? Sometimes the answer is because it doesn't fucking work. And sometimes there's no one has come up with a process to make it work yet. And when you examine it, neither can you. Okay, then we can't do that. But are you sure? Are you sure? Because most people are sure of things that are not true. So if we learn enough, and we think in a systems manner enough, we may not figure out how to do everything, but we'll figure out how to do all that is necessary to obtain what we're pursuing in our lives with our freedom and liberty. What good is freedom if you don't do something with it? We also need to teach children that failure and discomfort are necessary if one is to succeed. There is no person who has ever done anything meaningful with zero suffering, with zero sacrifice, with zero discomfort. Think of anybody that you admire for their achievements. A professional athlete makes a lot of money for playing sports ball. Yeah? Then you go do it. The people that play at a top in any sport, I don't give a fuck if it's that, what's shit with the ice, the curling, right? Like, the people that are top athletes worked incredibly hard to become top athletes. Whether it's if you're a top football player or basketball player or baseball player, you spend a lot of time running, exercising, practicing, right? Lifting weights, right? You controlling your intake of food. All of the top players, man, they have personal coaches. None of those coaches are as good as the player. They're there to help them define accountability, right? They sacrificed. Oh, what about something like big fat guy that plays darts? And he's like the world champion dart player. How many times, how much work was done to become that good? The person that's the top of the business world, they were working when you were sleeping. I promise you that. No matter what you believe about nepotism and all that, the person that actually gets there and stays there, the workload is incredibly intense. Discomfort is necessary to succeed at anything meaningful. And I see kids get so give up so easy. My granddaughter had this issue to some degree. When the math started to get a little bit harder, I can't do it. It's hard. I'm like, if it wasn't hard, it wouldn't be learning and there'd be no need for school. She just wanted to be able to do it as soon as she looked at it. We had to walk through that. And I always tell her, like, what happened the first time? She's competing at like a high level in gymnastics now. You know, the four apparatus thing, the floor, the bar, the beam, you know, all that shit. And she's really good. She's won a lot of competitions. And every time she wins a competition, they move her up another level. And sometimes she moves up another level like 3 weeks out from the next competition where she hasn't had much time in that level to develop. And she's still winning and placing in competitions, right? Very, very, my point, she's good at it. And I was, what happened the first time you did a somersault or a backflip or whatever, right? We sucked. And you had to work hard to be able to do it. Why do you think that anything you do that you don't yet know how to do is going to be any different? And the truth is some of the most gifted people suffer the most for this because most things are easy when something's hard. That seems like it shouldn't be. That just means you're finally stretching and you're finally developing at a level commensurate with your ability. You're going to be sad. You're going to be unhappy. You're going to be uncomfortable. Okay. You're going to fail and that's okay. And again, like I said, everything I'm telling you to teach kids applies to you too. This idea that, Gen Zs are really mad. They're really upset, right? They're angry at society because they believe that they're supposed to be comfortable all the time. They believe that they're supposed to, like, I get out of college, I get a good job, I pay my student loans, I get an apartment, I get a car, start moving up in the world. No, that's never been how that worked. That's never been how that worked. Your first job always sucks. You're always broke. Most people going back, I can tell you 35 years ago when I was doing it, what's the first thing you did when you started looking for a place? Look for a fucking roommate, right? You look for a fucking roommate. Sometimes it's three or four people sharing an apartment together because no one has enough money for it. You drive a piece of shit car. You schlep coffee or whatever the lowest person in that organization has dumped on them. That's what you do. It doesn't matter if you're in a mechanical shop busting tires or in an office getting coffee. You do what the fuck you're asked to do, and it sucks, and you're underappreciated until you prove yourself. And even after you prove yourself, you're still underappreciated because that's how it is. That's paying your dues. That's taking your licks. Now, sure, at some point, you develop enough competency. And if that organization or that opportunity is not going to pan out to be, you look elsewhere, but you see it as the gift that it was. Now, when you go look elsewhere, well, what are you doing? Well, I work for so-and-so. Well, why are you here? Because I believe I've reached the limits of my growth in that organization. I'm looking for something more challenging and my next step in my career. That is a good answer because those guys are jerks. Not a good answer. I've heard that answer. I didn't hire that person. That's all I'm saying. Because I'm like, this is a person that can't, like, I'm like, if you think, right, I literally have been given the name jerk by you guys who love me. What do you think it's like to work for me? Especially 20 years ago, what do you think it was like to work for me? You think I was all soft and mushy and like, oh, I'm sorry that you couldn't figure it out and sat there for 7 hours on my payroll doing nothing but looking at your Facebook with your thumb in your ass? It's okay, Timmy. Let me pat you on the head and teach you how to do it right. Fuck no, you did that once, you got reprimanded. Twice, you're fired. Right? Wasn't the thing in Glengarry Glen Ross? If you've ever seen that movie, right? First prize is a new car. Second prize is a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired. That's who I was. And that's who you're going to go work for. And there's going to become workplaces are going to get more like that. As less people are necessary for the jobs we do need to fill. So you better learn failure and discomfort are necessary because for anything you want to do. You know, unless you have money and you can just go to a ranch here like in Texas where you sit in a little mini house with a heater on hunting deer, and basically you have a guide sitting there going, well, that one there, that's Bill. He has a drop tine. He's going to buck about 168. If you want to shoot him, he's $14,000. Unless you're that guy, hunting is being cold, being miserable, practicing your craft, learning to take shots and be good at enough to where you're competent enough to earn the right to take a shot at a living animal, because gut shooting a deer is just morally wrong. Should never happen. If it doesn't, it better be an absolute something crazy happened. It's not because you're just incompetent. You're going to be cold. You're going to be wet. You're going to be hot. You're going to be sweaty. You're going to get bit by bugs. So what isn't, what would you start with that's actually worth doing that will never require sacrifice or discomfort or unhappiness or failure that you can become good at? Nothing. Nothing. Rook TSP says, cold and miserable, especially in PA in winter. If you've been around a while, you know that's exactly where I'm from. There's cold, there's deer stand cold, and then they're standing in the swamp in the rain duck hunting cold. It is a whole new level. The duck hunting is earlier than the year, than the deer stand. The overall ambient temperature is probably a little warmer in duck season, but standing in hip waders up to above your knees in freezing water while it's misting and raining and calling ducks is a whole different kind of suffering. It really is. As is early trout season, as is so many things. So if that applies to fishing and hunting, which millions of people do for fun and recreation, anything that's actually competitive is going to be harder. Our children are miserable because they have an unreasonable expectation from life. And when you believe that your expectation is reasonable and everybody's reinforced your expectation, it never comes to be. You either decide it is your fault. You become a person that feels like you're worthless. And that's why we have such a high suicide rate in our children. Or you become an angry youngster who wants change by any means necessary and hears the siren song of Marxism and thinks it makes sense. I don't know, but if I wanted to take over a society, this seems like a pretty good playbook, so we need to counter it. And we need to instill the spirit of insurrection in them. We have been taught that insurrection is a bad word. We even have the Insurrection Act. Insurrection, that should be punishable by death. When a government becomes truly unjust, when a government tramples upon the rights of its people and there is no room for redress, it is not only right that the people rise up in insurrection and rebellion, it is their duty. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me it's not the standard we hold other countries to. Don't we use it to justify war? Well, they're bombing people that didn't do anything. Oh, they should have done something about their government a long time ago. What about you, asshole? Right? Same shit. All wars are not necessarily foreign. Some are domestic. Got all these young 20-somethings out there. The reason I can't have a house and nice things is the boomers stole it. They should have voted for the right people. Why don't you? If you think they could have done something when they were in their 20s, because that's when all this shit happened. They were all in their 20s and teens. And you feel powerless. What do you think they felt like? They didn't do this shit to you. The state did this shit to you. The generations are just the means by which we segregate the timeline of the advancement of the state. That's all it is. I'm sorry that no one taught you that, but I'm telling you now, insurrectionism. Because there's many ways to be insurrectionist. There's many ways to be. One of my buddies just introduced me to a term I've never heard before. I love this term. Malicious compliance. You know what malicious compliance is? Malicious compliance is when you have a leader, a boss in the workplace, and you've always been the person that goes above and beyond what's expected. In fact, you're actually violating policy, but they actually like you doing it because violating that policy benefits the company. I don't mean you're stealing. You're not doing anything illegal, but maybe they say, like, employees are not supposed to drive for more than 8 hours a day, but you're not an over-the-road trucker with an odometer on your wheels and checkpoints. You're a service technician. So when you need to drive 14 hours, you drive 14 hours, even though the company manual says you're not supposed to, and the company pays you for it. But because you have good, solid leadership and a certain amount of autonomy, you're like, you know what? I'll do it because I care about my job so much that I'll spend those extra hours on the road. As long as I get paid for it, I don't care. And I'll be there in the morning instead of the next afternoon. Right? That's going above and beyond. Malicious compliance is when you're like, oh, you're a dick. Oh, you expect me to do things and not pay me for them. Oh, you want to micromanage my life, even though I've been doing this for, 8 years, and there's never been a complaint about the way I do it, even though that I have the best area out of all the technicians in the company, right? My customers love me. And when you have a problem that somebody can't handle in their area, I'm the one you call to go to their area on an airplane and fix it. That's who I've been, but now you want to step on my dick. Guess what? I checked them. Apparently, I'm not supposed to do that anymore, Bob. I'm going to do it by the book. Malicious compliance. That is a form of insurrection. That's a form of insurrection. Getting a person that's an asshat like that to record their own meeting when they're going to be an asshat because they think it's in their benefit to do so, so that all the stupid shit they say is on the record, that is also a form of insurrection. And kudos to you. I won't name you. You know who you are because I don't want it to possibly somehow get back, right? Okay. So just saying. That's insurrection is not always standing up an army. There's many ways to do insurrections. When they say you can't sell milk, but you sell it in a gallon jug marked as a soil additive, that's a form of insurrection. When they say you can't use Bitcoin, you're like, bitch, stop me. That's a form of insurrection. When they tell you you can't do anything, especially when there's no actual law to prevent you, and you're like, fuck you, I'm going to do it my own way, especially if you do it within the boundaries of what advances your life for the better, not out of spite, that's insurrection. The spirit of insurrection is I will not do it only because you told me to. But a good insurrectionist isn't going to say, I won't do it because you told me to. Because sometimes what people tell you to do is the right choice. An insurrectionist says, I will, it's Jeet Kune Do, right? I think about statist jujitsu, right? It's not going to be like statist Jeet Kune Do. They do teach you in government schools when you're crossing the road to look both ways before you cross the street, right? And look, left, right, and left again, because at least in America, the cars, onboard cars are coming this way. Before you should do that. You should be like, fuck that. Oh, I got hit by a truck. I'll show them. Right? You don't do that. But you do what makes sense. Not just because some authority figure told you. That's insurrectionist thinking. I have a whole series of shows that I've done over 17 years that are tagged on the blog, The Insurrection. Not all of them are about government. Living free, in spite of being in a world of totalitarianism, is being an insurrectionist. And it is something we should all admire and aspire to. Agorism is a form of insurrection. Malicious compliance is a form of insurrection. Top says malicious compliance is also called working to contract in the union world. Exactly. The insurrection is you. Yes, we did the song The Revolution Is You. But, looking back on it, it's probably more accurate to call it insurrectionist. So this is how I've put in some of my talks, including in permaculture. A revolution is where you take power from one group of controllers and hand it to another group of controllers. That's a revolution. An insurrectionist takes power from the ruler, period. Period. Obviously, if I take the power from the ruler, then everybody, see, I have it, but so does everybody else. Revolutions move the controlling power. Insurrections remove the control, thereby empowering all. So be an insurrectionist and teach your kids to be insurrectionists. So is there any hope? Are we the last free generation? Oh, I want to tell you, I want to give you some big rah-rah fucking shit right now. I can't. I don't know. I only control me. And you only control you. So we're back to the original question asked by somebody before we even started. How do you define freedom? There will always be freedom if there are people willing to live free. That's how simple it is. As long as there are people that are like, I will figure out the system and I will figure out how to be free in spite of the system, not due to the system. So when I say last free generation, I mean mass freedom, where everybody looks around and goes, this is pretty great. And somebody from outside would come in and go, yeah, it is. You're not deluding yourself. I don't know if we have it in us as a society to course correct what has been 100 years of declining freedom in this country. I don't know that we did. But I don't think we're the last free people. There will always be free people. There are people who remain free when you throw them in a jail cell. You can't truly enslave them. I'm asking you to either stay one or become one today. With that, I hope you guys enjoyed today's show. I've been doing shows kind of in this theme a lot lately, and I've been enjoying them a great deal. I didn't see many questions come in because if anybody did ask questions, a few I saw didn't use the capital letter system, in spite of the banner going on down there. I hit one on a fly. I didn't notice anyone else, but G0DH8R, Gobbler. I don't know what you're trying to do there, but cool. 777, wishing you a festive Yule season, Jack. Cheers. Santa Jack says ho, ho, ho back. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. But so here we're going to go and wrap up. If you like the show and the work that we do, please consider helping us out just by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. I'm bringing an item around that I've brought around a lot lately because I love it and because I just brought like three more sets of them to put in the drawer so they'll always be there because I believe this is being discontinued. These are the Anker Soundcore V20i open-ear headphones. I love these things because they have the ring that goes around your ear and it doesn't fall off into the grass, into the duck pond, into the mud. You know, somewhere you can't find it and what have you. They have great sound and they're on sale for about $25. Anker is an incredibly good, high quality company. These at retail are more like $50 to $60 and they're on par with a lot of other earbuds that are more in the $100 range. They are not like super high end Beats quality, but if you just want to hear stuff and enjoy it and like it, and especially if you are someone who is more of a listener to like podcasts and audiobooks and stuff. You're not looking for deep bass, right? These are going to be all you need and more at the price. They're just great. I would tell you that like if occasionally you have your earbuds are, you know, without charge or you left them home, these are extra, a great extra to have around as well at the price. I haven't found anything even close to their price point that was anywhere near as close as good. In my opinion, anyway, because I do have the, and I've had several of you guys reach out to me, right? I find it interesting that I'm not the only one. They say, I have weird ears. I've gotten emails. I have weird ears too, Jack. And it's weird. Like the ones that stick inside your ears, like my right ear, it stays in. My left ear, it seems like every 5 minutes, it's literally jumping out. And I got sick and tired of it and started using the over the ear ones. And a lot of people say they're better for you as well from a standpoint of signal and noise. So it's up to you. The last thing I'll say before I go is my book, Laws of Life, is on sale, available at Amazon. A few bucks knocked off all of the options there are. So it's available in Kindle. It's available as a softcover book, and it's available as an audiobook. I will disclose the audiobook is AI read, but it sounds pretty decent. It's not perfect. There were some errors that even when we fixed it are still there. When I get done with the second book, there will be a second edition where the last bits of it will get cleaned up. But this is a stance of it is better to be done than be perfect. And I had somebody write me an email and talk all kinds of shit about the book to me because they have a master's degree in English, right? And I need to know what's going on. And my response was, Can you show me your book that made the Amazon bestsellers list so I can see how to do it right? I stopped hearing from them. If you want the message, which is 16 laws of life to do the kinds of things we were talking about today without getting political really at all, check out Laws of Life. If you did read the book and you did enjoy it and you have not yet left me a review, please do. The more reviews we get, the more books we can sell, the more people we can reach. And a final reminder, on the 22nd, which is the Monday of Christmas week, the Solopreneur AI course will go live. If you want to register so you will get an email when that sale happens 15 minutes before it's live, so you can try to get a seat, because that's what it is. Go to jackslaws.com, look for the little banner up at the top, little ticker at the top, click that link, and you can register for the AI course. The last time we opened it up, it sold out in less than 2 minutes. And even with Tom sitting there with his finger on a kill switch, we still oversold it a little bit. That's how much demand for it there is. We're outnumbered prospective buyers to how many seats are available? About 9 to 1. So if you want in, there is no way you're getting in without pre-registration. With that, I'll catch you guys tomorrow with a great interview. Then we'll have an expert panel Q&A show for the week. Next week's going to be straight through normal week, all the way up to Christmas week, when we'll have that AI sale go on. We'll have, like, we're only going to have 2 shows that week, and then we're going to have the Christmas special, and then I will disappear, and I will come back after the holidays clean shaven. With that, take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.